Calling all cars, calling all cars. It's Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com. I'm Amelia Dalton, and first off, if you were wondering, yes, the title of today's broadcast is a reference to one of the best television shows in the history of television. So, sadly, no, we won't be leaping from life to life, attempting to put right what was once wrong and hoping that each time our next leap would be a leap home. No, we're talking about IoT, endpoint security, and quantum computing. Let me bring in SecureRF President and CEO Lewis Parks to talk about all of this and more. Hi, Lewis. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you.
So first off, tell me about SecureRF. What are you guys all about?
So we're all about security. And when I say security, just for the benefit of the audience, primarily focused on things like identification and authentication and protecting messages, because oftentimes people think encryption. But we're very focused on that for very, very small processors, endpoint devices, and things that are commonly referred to or connected to the Internet of Things, you know, where security is difficult to do. Could be a sensor, could be an actuator, could be some sort of end device. It could be in a car, it could be an implantable medical device, it could be something as part of a building. But securing very small, low-resource end devices is what we focus on.
Now, Lewis, someone told me that you might have some exciting news to share about the advancement toward quantum computing. So tell me more about that.
Well, it's exciting, and I would say we're the fortunate benefactors of the work that my mathematicians have been doing for decades. For full disclosure, when we began this process many years ago, we actually did not have quantum computing on our horizon, and we are very fortunate that the nature of the mathematics and the mathematical platform on which our solutions are built have now been shown to be quantum resistant to the currently known attacks. And that's important, two probably important things to this, one of which in my answer already addresses it, and that is quantum computing is something that has been around, at least in theory, for many, many years, late 70s, early 80s, the first physics papers. But really last year, year and a half, where people have successfully built elementary quantum machines, quantum computers that prove the technology. So the clock has started ticking towards larger, more significant quantum computers. And when you do get those, what they will be able to do is to run two currently known algorithms, and there may be more coming, that will significantly impact and in some cases take down security that we use today. This is becoming a concern. If you are building things that will be in the market 5, 8, 10 years out and perhaps need to be protected, like processors guiding an autonomous car in an airplane or other control systems, then you need to be thinking about implementing security that will work in light of a quantum computer. It's a little harder because one of the algorithms, Shor's algorithm, specifically attacks successfully things like RSA and ECC. So the NSA, NIST, and others are very actively working in the market to identify methods like ours that are quantum resistant so that the options now for people building devices for the long term. So we're very, very excited to be part of a solution to future-proof people's solutions.
Okay, so let's get more into the security issues surrounding this. It's a hot button issue in almost everything these days. How do you see security playing a part in all of this?
Well, so people often, unfortunately, what's happening generally speaking in the world is processing, a digital component is being added to everything. I mean, there are people that will tell you that one day everything, everywhere will have a sensor and it will be collecting data. So already, you know, our thermostats are collecting data about where we are in the house and when we're in those areas. And that's all being accumulated in a cloud. If you have appropriate apps, the music you listen to is being accumulated. For years, most of us have known that what we look at on a browser is being accumulated. But individual actions, things that are going on in the environment that are not now connected to a network or the internet will be, and everything seems to be heading towards being connected. So it's creating an issue of what is this data and how is it going to be used and who should have access to it and who should in fact have access to that sensor or device. So I often use the example that many people listening to this probably have a car where you can see the air pressure of your tires on a gauge on a screen inside the car. And that's happening because there are little RF sensors inside each wheel transmitting uniquely, paired just like your telephone to your car, telling you what the air pressure in those wheels are. Well, because it's RF, it goes 360 degrees, meaning somebody outside the car could also see that signal. I was in a meeting in Washington where they actually thought about using that to identify vehicles going across the border. So how data is used, where it's being accumulated from, the places, we're not even thinking about half of them today. So the idea of being able to apply security to all of these devices is important because not everything will need security, but many people, for the sake of privacy, would argue most will. So there's a critical intersection coming there between, you know, what we may need or want. And I think it's risen to a pretty high order because, again, some of your listeners may already be aware that there is actually an IoT security bill being moved through the Senate and the U.S. government to address the fact that industry may not have been moving fast enough, which is an interesting thought for the U.S. government, where they're requesting security standards, patchable platforms, etc., in order to buy things or sell things to the U.S. government that are IoT in nature that are secure. So I think that in some cases there's some great opportunities, in other cases there are great challenges because devices have not been secured yet or are very poorly secured, and we're now realizing whether it's a botnet attack or outright data stealing that security is important and can impact us in our daily lives. And of course, the quantum is an issue because what it will do is it's going to literally address or attack, you know, the security that we used for your credit card purchases, for buying things on the web, for securely communicating with your office, etc. Imagine all of that going away wholesale. So these algorithms, you know, one of which will reduce the security capabilities, and that is addressed, and all systems will be affected by that, and that's Grover's algorithm. So we'll need to double our security to maintain what we have today. And, you know, again, the computational workload on many devices we use today will go up significantly to maintain our current security levels. And of course, the second algorithm, Shor's, it goes to the heart of most of what's being used to secure the authentication components of what we do today, including a lot of things used in blockchain and the world of digital currencies. So they're going to have to come to terms with this at some point in time too. So there's a lot of areas to be touched and affected, and a lot of things to, you know, keep somebody up at night.
Absolutely. All right, Lewis, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I heard you're a bit of a mini farmer. You've got beehives, vegetables, chickens. Tell me more about that.
Well, the funny thing is, I live about 45 miles outside New York City, Manhattan, and Connecticut, in an area that is, I would not say you would drive by and say, yep, there's another tractor. But I do have a big backyard, and I have many chickens running around, actually caged to prolong their lives, and a couple of beehives and incredibly fascinating creatures and vegetables. So I think food and how we get it and where we get it's important, and it's given me some pretty interesting insight, and actually how hard it would be without some of the help of technology to produce enough food, because trust me, as much as I'm doing and as good as it is, it would need a lot more to feed my family.
Definitely. I know that very well myself. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Lewis.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
And now it's time for a little quantum news you may have missed. Okay, so get this. On September 29th of this year, researchers at the Austrian Academy of Sciences and the Chinese Academy of Science conducted the very first quantum video call. Okay, so this call actually used the MISCUS satellite, which was launched into space in 2016. And this call was the very first live demonstration of a call powered and encrypted using quantum technology. Okay, so how? Well, the call was encrypted by sending information embedded in photons generated by that MISCUS satellite.
So these photons were actually sent to ground stations in Europe, China, and the satellite laser ranging station located in Austria's city of Graz. How is this call different from, say, other satellite-assisted communications? Well, by utilizing the orbital relay station, this kind of quantum-assisted communications can actually bypass the limitations imposed by the curvature of the Earth and the signal loss in those long fiber optic cables. Even further, anyone attempting to infiltrate the system will immediately be discovered. Johannes Hansteiner from the Austrian Academy of Sciences explains it better. He says, if anyone attempts to intercept photons exchanged between the satellite and the ground station and to measure their polarization, the quantum state of the photons will be changed by this measurement attempt, immediately exposing the hackers. I couldn't have said it better myself. Really, I couldn't have. If you want even more information about this first quantum video call, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page on eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can check out our Twitter account at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, keyword EEJournal. It is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And you can subscribe to our EEJournal YouTube channel as well. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of October 13th, 2017, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.